A woman named Cecilia Hard wrote this reading from Pittsburgh. Reduce, reuse, recycle. She says, that's been my mantra for 30 years of living. I'd like it to be my mantra for my death as well. My green burial will reduce toxins, reuse land, and recycle my body. Nature and the outdoors are very important to me. I like the idea that I'll leave a much smaller footprint at my death than if I opted for a conventional embalming or burial or even cremation. I was thrilled when I heard that Pittsburgh would be home to a green cemetery. Penn Forest is a beautiful setting in an area where I have often walked. Its proximity to Plum Creek and Dark Hollow Park are perks. I even imagine myself gently moldering away in a lush western Pennsylvania meadow, warmed by the sunshine, shaded by trees, birdsong in the air. Natural burial seems a logical outgrowth of my lifetime philosophy. I don't know all that will matter to me once I'm dead, but it matters to me now. I've told family and friends about my plans. I've purchased a plot at Penn Forest. Meadow lot number 624 is waiting for me. So I'd like to introduce our guest speaker this morning, and we're very happy that he could be here. Mr. Pete McQuillan is the manager of the Penn Forest Natural Burial Park. Pete, would you like to join?
I love being in this building. There's been a lot of times in my life. I was trying to think why I was here before, but I think it was a district meeting some years ago, but I love it. Anyway, here's my talk. In my experience, there are two kinds of vacation people, beach people and woods people. I'm a woods person, lying on the beach, getting sand in my shoes, and skin cancer, that's not my thing. But hiking, rock climbing, watching birds and animals, identifying plants and listening to the wind in the trees or a quiet babbling brook, that I like. One of my favorite benefits of living beside Penn Forest Natural Burial Park is our 35 acres of woods. I walk the trails every day, sometimes two or three times in a day. It's an oasis of peace and wildlife. Usually I walk for 30 or 45 minutes by myself and never see another person. My love of suburban forests probably comes from my childhood. I grew up in Mount Lebanon. Some of you may know where that is. It's an older Pittsburgh suburb with a beautiful undeveloped woods behind my house. It was my daily playground for fort building, hiking, sledding, looking for buried treasure, and sometimes burying treasure. It's gone now to tract housing. Then when I was 11, we moved to Greensburg, Pennsylvania, and our backyard there opened on abandoned farm fields, that were turning naturally back to forests. Another wooded playground for me. But all that woods is gone too now. Single family housing and dormitories for Pitt's Greensburg campus. My wife Nancy loves the woods too. She spent her summers on her grandparents' dairy farm. It was called Hidden Brook near Coriopolis. 100 acres of woods, meadows, cow pastures, rolling hills, woodland trails, a pig named Susie, and yes, a hidden brook. We visited a couple years ago. It's all gone. The trees were cleared away, the rolling hills scraped smooth and flat. The brook is gone, replaced by asphalt driveways, cul-de-sacs, and nearly identical half-million-dollar McMansions on quarter-acre lots. According to the Maryland Forest Service, urban and suburban forests provide these benefits to our cities and their environs. One, they reduce air pollution. Two, they fight the atmospheric greenhouse effect. Three, they conserve water. Four, they reduce erosion. Five, they reduce energy use. Six, they improve local microclimate. Seven, they increase economic stability. Eight, they reduce noise pollution. And nine, they increase plant and animal diversity. That's nine good things about forests. So instead of being sad about the destruction of all those forests that Nancy and I loved, we decided it might be a good idea if we found some way to buy a piece of woods and nurse it back to health. Of course, we didn't have any money, and we didn't know the first thing about forest restoration, but our lack of money and knowledge has never stopped us before, and once we get on a mission, and starting in January of 2008, I was on a mission, and Nancy was on a mission with me. I was the front person, but she was the brains of the outfit, still is, and my constant supporter, editor, and her family, one of our financial backers. Actually, the idea of starting a woodland burial ground came first, but we soon learned that we could also restore the forest land. I remember I read an article around that time that explained that some people were doing both, restoring forests by using a part of the income they got from selling lots in a natural burial park. Sounded like a plan to me. So I started out thinking this should be a slam dunk. How hard could it be? Well, 10 and a half years later, we are doing exactly that on the 35 acres of forested land at Penn Forest Natural Burial Park near Verona, PA, 13 miles from downtown Pittsburgh. It was a piece of cake. So what is a natural or green burial? Well, it could be the 10th good thing about urban forests. By burying people among the trees in biodegradable shrouds or coffins with no toxic embalming chemicals, just like Barney, as their bodies decay, they nourish the soil and the growing plants. There's nothing new about this. For most of our history, this is how people were buried. Jews and Muslims still bury their dead this way, and it's completely legal under Pennsylvania cemetery law. So how do I summarize 10 and a half years of effort on this project in a 20-minute talk and still have time for lessons learned? Well, I wrote this little haiku that does it. Find the land for it, find the people to help with it, and do the work, work, work. So we looked at and rejected over 200 properties in Allegheny, Beaver, Butler, Washington, and Westmoreland counties. We drove about 40,000 miles in the process, and it took 3 years. We hooked up with over 500 supporters along the way. We started a nonprofit called Green Burial Pittsburgh to help educate people on the advantages of natural burial, and dozens of people donated to that nonprofit. We now have more than 1,200 people who have signed up for our Penn Forest email list. In just a few years' time, 743 people have liked us our Penn Forest Facebook page, and 454 have liked our Green Burial Pittsburgh page. So, and we have about 50 active volunteers. Tree planters, trail tenders, goat herders, yeah, we have goats, and the donkey. Stall muckers and gardeners. 20 investors put up the money to buy and develop the property, and we are selling lots at an ever-increasing pace. And did I mention work, work, work? I think I've said enough about our cemetery for now. We have a 5-minute YouTube on our website, penforestcemetery.com. for people who want to learn more. And I brought some brochures here, which I took over to the coffee hour place, and you can take one if you want. But this is a UU church service, and I think it's important for me to share a couple of lessons I've learned along the way about existential psychology, religion, and spirituality. Existential psychology is a school of thought that tries to explain our mental health in terms of how well we deal with some of the facts that come with our existence as human beings. These include the inevitability of death, freedom and the responsibility that entails, isolation, and meaninglessness. Some psychologists reason that how well we deal with these four facts of life is directly related to our state of mental health. Others argue that dealing with them is not as important as just not denying them. But also notice that these four facts are the grist for many of the world's religions. Death is dealt with by arguing for rebirth or an afterlife. Freedom is dealt with by defining sin and arguing against it. Isolation is dealt with by connection with a religious community and a promise of spending an eternity with a god and devotees. And meaninglessness is dealt with by ascribing all things to a god who works in mysterious ways. As a student of religion, all of these facts are of interest to me and in some way play out in operating our burial ground, but I don't have time to discuss them all. The main one, though, that I would like to discuss is denial of death. I've been involved with selling things and services for most of my career. I know sales can be difficult, but I had no idea what a powerful deterrent to purchasing cemetery lots the denial of death is. Even though people might be in sympathy with our goals of forest restoration and natural burial, most people do not want to believe that they personally are really going to die. And they are just not ready to do anything to prepare for that eventuality. I first became aware of this when I talked to Ed Bixby, who owns Steelmantown Green Cemetery in southern New Jersey. He told me how after they first opened a couple years ago, before us, 7 years ago, that he hosted a catered picnic for everybody who had sent emails in saying they were interested in green burial. Over 100 people came, and guess how many people bought lots, he said. I don't know, I said. Two. Two people out of the 100 visitors bought lots. And I followed up with all those visitors since then, and only one more has bought a lot. Cemetery lots are a tough sale. Yes, they're a tough sale, but we've done better than Ed on sales. We're in a major metropolitan area, and we have a bigger list of prospects to draw from. But I don't believe it's money that keeps people from buying lots. I think it's largely their denial of death. I say that in part because I have had many people tell me intently that they plan to be buried at Penn Forest, but then they refuse to do anything to make sure that happens, even when it would cost them nothing. Funeral expenses are not a trivial matter. I'm involved with the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Western Pennsylvania, and our goal is to help people plan for their funeral expenses and not spend more money for their funerals than their families can afford. I answer the Funeral Consumers Hotline, and I have heard many sad stories from families who ended up spending $10,000 to $20,000 on funerals that the deceased would not have wanted or needed. Sometimes they spend years paying off these expenses. Sometimes a widow is forced to downsize her life. Sometimes money set aside for grandchildren's education is squandered on expensive funerals. I tell everyone who contacts Penn Forest to do two things to make sure this doesn't happen to them and their families. Two things that will cost them nothing. Select a funeral home and decide on what services they want for their funeral when they die. and write out a plan for their funeral and give it to their families. That's all. No money involved. The other thing people don't do is fill out their durable health care, power of attorney, and living will. Now, this form protects us from pain and suffering when we come to die. If you haven't filled one out and you end up in a hospital, they may be required by law or policy to do everything they can to keep you alive, no matter how painful or ineffective those treatments are, until your family tells them to stop. My father-in-law had not filled out this form when he was taken to the hospital around Christmas 5 years ago. And Nancy and her three siblings spent two long, torturous days debating the pros and cons of taking him off life support, while he endured the indignities of modern ICU medical care. Eventually, they reached a consensus and took him off the machines. But it would have been so much less painful for all of us and for him if he had written a directive. Based on that experience, I came home determined to fill my advanced care directive. Yes, for all my preaching to others, I hadn't done it. The Funeral Consumers Alliance offers a package they call the Before I Go Kit. They sell them for $10. I bought them for Nancy and me, but I never got around to filling them out. Nancy's dad died in December 2011, but guess what? You know when I finally filled out a form? Almost a year later. And do you know why? Because I was giving a talk like this at my own church, and I'd be too embarrassed to tell them I hadn't done it, so I did it. So I have my own death denial issues. By the way, that comes in a snazzy plastic case you can put in your freezer, and it has a little magnet that you stick on the outside of your freezer to tell people where it is in case that you have an emergency. I know that Tibetan Buddhists are very concerned that they are prepared for their own deaths. The Dalai Lama talks about a daily meditation he uses where he envisions his dying, watching his body organs shutting down, imagining the decomposition and the decay of his body. So that when I filled out my form, I tried to meditate like that and envision my death and how those around me might use the form when I was gone. And that brings me to one last thing I'd like to share with you. I've noticed in talking to people about our cemetery, I found that people with different religious traditions or no tradition seem to have different levels of death denial. Now, I have to preface my comments on religious and death acceptance by saying a few things in background. First, I don't make any cold calls. Everyone I talk to about buying a cemetery lot first contacted me saying they were interested. So right away, they are different from the population at large. Second, my sample size is still small. I've talked to maybe 1,000 people so far. And third, death denial is by far the norm in our culture. So people who are open about preparing for their deaths are usually just slightly ajar rather than being really open. But I do keep track of religious affiliation of the people who shop for cemeteries a lot, and I'm always looking for demographic trends that might help us with our marketing. Sometimes I ask people about their religion, but I usually don't need to. There's something about shopping for a cemetery lot that makes people want to tell me about their religion. Anyway, I keep track. And here's what I've noticed so far. The unchurched, those with no particular religious affiliation, seem to be the most open. And for reasons I don't know, but you might speculate on, the unchurched seem to be much more interested in a natural burial as a concept than the population at large. Also, so far, they are our most common category of cemetery visitors. Jews and Muslims are frequent visitors too, and they seem to be very open to discussing and planning for the demise. Although I haven't talked with very many, evangelicals seem to be a bit more accepting of death than mainline Protestants. And that's about all I've learned. So what about Unitarian Universalists? Well, it might not surprise you, but for whatever reasons, UUs are all over the map. Some are gung-ho. We have several UUs who are investors. A few have been on our Green Burial Pittsburgh board. Some have bought cemetery lots. However, they buy cremation lots, slightly more often than whole body lots. They are our core constituency. But then there's another large group of UUs who on the surface seem to be natural burial advocates. They talk it up to their friends and family. They tell me how glad they are to have a green cemetery in Pittsburgh. They subscribe to our newsletter, and they tell me they plan to be buried in our cemetery. A few of them have actually visited us, but they don't buy a lot. And they don't have a written funeral plan. I think they might be beach people. And finally, there's another largish group of UUs who just don't want to talk about it. Sometimes I notice they avoid me at church. If death comes up, they change the subject. I expect some of them from this Meadville church may have decided to stay home today when they found out what the topic was. So, like I said, it's a diverse group. But if you're one of our UU supporters and you're thinking about helping out Penn Forest Natural Burial Park, please come out and buy a cemetery lot. Not because you'll ever actually need to use it. Just think of it as your contribution to forest restoration. And if by some odd chance your body does end up with us someday and feeds our forest plants, then your friends and family can say, that's the 10th good thing about you. And as for me, lot number 370 is waiting beside a dogwood tree in our meadow. Now that I have done, Nancy and I bought the first two cemetery lots.